VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, it was dubbed the biggest abortion case since Roe v. Wade. Yesterday, oral arguments were held in the case Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Now, we talked about this a few days ago going up to the Supreme Court with Brad Mattis at Life Issues Institute, but our guest today represents one of the organizations that filed an amicus brief on this case, listened to the oral arguments, and is here today with his evaluation and comment on this landmark case. Joining us is constitutional attorney Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt has well over 230 published legal opinions, has multiple scholarly law review publications, some 10 books. He has filed numerous briefs and argued in many federal and state courts, also argued two landmark cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. Matt, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you, Jim.
So before we dissect what took place yesterday at the court, I'm wondering if you could just give us a brief overview of what this case was, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. What is the issue presented?
Well, the issue presented is whether it would be upheld contrary to all the Supreme Court precedent going back to 1973. Because what Mississippi did is pass a law that bans abortion at 15 weeks. That's prior to what's called viability, the ability of the baby to live outside of the womb. And so it's way earlier than viability. Viability is going to be around 22, 23, 24 weeks, depending upon the situation. But it's going to be in the early 20s. This is now 15 weeks, much, much earlier. So what the cases have come down, if you start in 1973, Roe versus Wade set up this artificial trimester system. And so in the first trimester, the state has, they said, no interest in regulating abortion. In the second trimester, the state can put some regulations on abortion, for example, physician licensing and various kinds of restrictions or laws regarding the location where the abortion would take place, but cannot prohibit it. In the third trimester, where you're now at that point in time, past the 22-week period, past the 23-week period, in the third trimester, you could put more restrictions on abortion. But even then, you couldn't totally ban abortion in the third trimester. Then 1992 comes along, and Planned Parenthood versus Casey is up, and the information and the discussion at the time was that it was going to overrule Roe versus Wade. Why? Because medical technology had made Roe versus Wade, the trimester system, obsolete, because now children could be born into the second trimester and live, whereas Roe at the time assumed it would only be in the third trimester. So the trimester system had to go, and that was the essential core of Roe. So what happened was, after the argument, it was a 5-4 decision to overturn Roe. Chief Justice Rehnquist was writing the opinion, but Souter and O'Connor lobbied and pressured Kennedy. And 30 days after the opinion was in the writing process, he flipped his vote, and he went to the other side.
Wow.
So for the next 30 days in June, it was a decision to uphold abortion, but to throw out the trimester system and replace it with a so-called viability marker, when the baby is able to live outside the womb on its own. And so 5-4 decision, it came out in June of 1992, and that viability issue has been part of the precedence of the court since then. So now you have Mississippi coming along, and they pass a law in 2018 that says, no, we're going to ban abortion long before viability, 15 weeks. So the lower courts followed the Supreme Court precedent and struck the law down. The Court of Appeals struck the law down, too. But some of the judges on the Court of Appeals lamented to the Supreme Court, we're following this only because we're required to adhere to what you're doing, but we don't like it, and it ought to be reconsidered and overturned. So the Supreme Court could have simply just ignored the case because what happened, they followed the Supreme Court precedents, the prior cases from the Supreme Court. Why would they take a case that actually followed their precedents, unless they want to reexamine their precedents. So they could have just simply said, no, you followed what we said to do, let's go on to the next case. But instead, they took the case. And that's where we had the oral argument yesterday.
Okay.
Now, here's the interesting thing. In order to take a case, you need four justices to vote to take a case. So we know we had four wanting to take this case. Of course, the people that would be on the other side, Sotomayor, Breyer, and Kagan, would not want to vote to take the case because they wouldn't want to reexamine it. We have at least four justices that want to reexamine it. But of such a case of this magnitude, we know from past situations that likely the four people had a fifth person in mind, and either you had five or more justices willing to take the case, or you certainly could count five, and that's why they took the case. Why? Because they want to throw out the previous Supreme Court precedent. And yesterday during the oral argument, I think that became fairly clear.
Yeah, and Matt, also at the same time, Liberty Counsel, you filed a brief in this case too, is that correct?
Yes, we filed a brief. It's a very unique brief. It was filed on behalf of over 70,000 African-American churches and Hispanic churches. And we represented Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and we pointed out the history of racism that is inherent in these abortion decisions, racism and eugenics. And it's really rooted all the way back into Charles Darwin, who wanted to evolve a superhuman race of white Europeans. And he felt certain races and ethnicities were savages, lower than human, subhuman, like baboons or chimpanzees or apes. And they were dragging down the humanity, and they needed to get rid of those races and ethnicities. And also that included certain people with disabilities or low IQs. Margaret Sanger was an adherent of Charles Darwin. And she then began to create these contraceptive clinics, and she put them in minority neighborhoods to stop the birth of minorities so that they could eliminate certain populations. Then abortion comes around, and Planned Parenthood begins adding abortion. And where we have now, 40% of all the abortions in America are done at Planned Parenthood abortion clinics. 86% of their abortion facilities are in minority neighborhoods in the top 25 counties where the most abortions are actually taking place. So what we have here is a very racist eugenic history with Planned Parenthood. But the Supreme Court has proved that, put a stamp of approval on it. They put the stamp of approval on it in 1927, where a case went to the Supreme Court, Buck versus Bell. And part of that whole eugenics movement, eliminating certain populations, in this case, people who had low IQs, what they were doing across the country and in Virginia, they were putting them in sanitariums, housing them, incarcerating them against their will so that they could not procreate. And there are sanitariums in different places around the country, including Virginia. But that became too expensive, so they wanted to sterilize them forcibly. So they passed a law, went to the Supreme Court. It was a test case, and the Supreme Court upheld the law. And the infamous words of that decision by Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., an adherent of Charles Darwin's evolution, social evolution, and so forth, he said, three generations of imbeciles are enough.
Oh, my.
And what he's referring to is he was saying that Carrie Buck was an imbecile in terms of an IQ chart, which is not true, but that's what they said. Her mother was an imbecile, and her young child was an imbecile. So you got three generations of these low IQ people. Well, Virginia has tolerated your kind enough, and they can stop your kind from procreating. So, yes, they have the right to be able to forcibly sterilize you.
Really, based
28 on states then adopted that, and Adolf Hitler implemented it in Nazi Germany and Nazi countries that were controlled by Hitler.
I mean, the very racist roots should be so evident here, Matt. You filed at Liberty Counsel this brief. I know other entities on both sides filed the brief. What impact do briefs have on a court? I know they hear the oral arguments. They have the original, you know, submissions to them. What impact does this have as they render their decisions?
Well, it depends upon the quality of the brief and what it brings to the table. And in our particular brief, we could have just simply argued the basic law that Roe is not rooted in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But that was going to be argued already. Yeah. So you don't want to just really repeat the same thing over and over again. That's already before the court, and then say, well, you filed an amicus brief. So if it's an amicus brief that adds something unique and new that is not in the actual brief of the original parties, that's really the kinds of brief that help the court. And that's what we did specifically with our brief. Justice Thomas, he has previously written about this racist history, and he has advocated the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And so we have added new material to the court that none of the other briefs contain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can have a very helpful, persuasive impact on the justices, because here's what our position essentially is, and this is from the facts. You put a stamp of approval on eugenics and racism in 1927. You carried that forward with abortion in 1973. You continued that and reaffirmed it in 1992 with Casey. You now know, in fact, even this year, Planned Parenthood has come out and they've admitted, as they should have long ago, that their founder, Margaret Sanger, was a racist. That's obvious. And so you know it now. And it's an obvious situation that what's happening is abortion is killing people. Obviously, it's not in the Constitution to have a right to an abortion, but it's also being used in a racist, eugenic way. You now know that, and so you have to deal with it. And if you don't overturn Roe versus Wade, you're putting your stamp of approval, again, on racism and eugenics. And it's time to close that chapter.
Yeah, indeed. Matt, so in our next segment here, we're going to really break down on what some of the questioning was from some of the justices. But the oral arguments were presented yesterday, and representing Mississippi was their Solicitor General, Scott Stewart. And I find it interesting that in the very early opening words of Solicitor General Stewart is that in referencing the previous Roe and Casey cases, he said they haunt our country. And I thought, wow, that's very appropriate language here.
They really do haunt the country. And Justice Thomas had previously said that the Supreme Court is going to have to deal with this travesty in the past because it literally makes the court illegitimate. And this particular Attorney General's office and the Solicitor General from the Mississippi Attorney General's office really hit the nail on the head that says it haunts our nation. It really undermines the legitimacy of the court, but even more so, it has resulted in, and he said it as well, he didn't use the word 62 million per se, but he used millions of babies have died. In fact, it's over 62 million and counting babies that have lost their lives brutally since January 22, 1973.
Wow.
So it's not only an aberration of the Constitution, it has caused incalculable human pain, disaster, and death.
Matt Staver with us here today on Crosstalk. A quick break, and we're going to come back and evaluate some of the arguments and questioning from justices. We're going to begin with this topic of stare decisis and how that came out yesterday. So stay with us. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, over the years, we've read a lot from science about amber. Has DNA ever been recovered from it?
Chris, there are fragments of DNA found in amber, but it's well known that DNA decomposes in such a short period of time that even in thousands of years, you'd not expect to find much DNA left. But now an even more remarkable thing has been found that has thrown evolution into a tizzy. Entombed within the bodies of insects fossilized in amber are ancient bacteria, which scientists have been able to revive. They've actually come back to life. Over 3,500 types of microorganisms have been rejuvenated. Chris, how can this be? This amber is thought to be millions and millions of years old, but how could things still be alive after all that time? Chris, I think it's the evolutionary story and the story of millions of years which is wrong. The Back to Genesis view makes a whole lot more sense.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Genesis.
Constitutional attorney Matt Staver is with us here today on Crosstalk, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. And yes, we're giving analysis to the Dobbs case yesterday, argued before the U.S. Supreme Court. Incidentally, Matt himself will be before the court this coming January the 18th in a case pertaining to the city of Boston and their discrimination against the Christian flag there. We're going to have Matt back on in early January just to talk about that case. But he has been before this court on a couple occasions already. Matt, as we continue to evaluate yesterday, we have Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and even Kagan to some extent made it rather clear that they thought stare decisis should rule, unless it looks like the court is just caving to public opinion or caving to politics here. Could you comment on this topic of stare decisis?
Yeah, stare decisis is essentially to follow the court's previous precedent. The problem is when the court's previous precedent is wrong, should you still follow it? And in this case, those three justices that you mentioned, they never defended the legal basis of Roe or Casey, because frankly, there is no legal basis or constitutional basis for it. In fact, none of the advocates for upholding Roe and Casey and striking down the law, none of them advocated or defended the original legal integrity of the decision. Instead, they looked at stare decisis. Well, you've done it in the past. We've been doing this now for nearly 50 years, so consequently, you ought to uphold it. Otherwise, if you don't, the court loses legitimacy. Now, where did that argument come from? It came from 1992 in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. In fact, in that decision where the vote was flipped 30 days after the writing and 30 days before it was released, O'Connor, Souter, and Kennedy wrote the opinion together. And what they said was shocking. The reason they said, even if Roe was wrongly decided, and we're not going to address whether it was, but even if it was wrongly decided, we have to continue to uphold it. Why? Because the court will lose its legitimacy in the eyes of the people. In fact, they said that the legislature creates laws, the executive enforces the law, but the judiciary has no power but the power of persuasion. And the power of persuasion only works if the people believe that the court is doing its job and it's a legitimate institution.
And
but if they lose faith, then the court loses its power.
And this is what Justice Sotomayor even indicated yesterday, that if Roe is overturned, she said the court won't be able to survive.
That's exactly what her position was about. And that's why Breyer kept saying, I want you to read these 12 to 14 pages of Casey. Read them. He gave the pages twice at least. You need to read it. Well, what he's referring to is the section that I just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Sotomayor's, her old presentation, her whole argument, it was almost a Sotomayor and Breyer oral argument,
yes,
if you will, because they took up so much time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very shocking. It's very revealing that they believe that if the court does not uphold the previous abortion decisions, it will lose its integrity, its legitimacy, and the court will have no more authority, and the court's really done. It's doomed. And really, it's to the contrary.
Yeah, and here's where I want you to bring in Justice Kavanaugh as well, because he pointed out that the court has many times overruled prior precedent.
Exactly. Yeah, Kavanaugh pointed out, and he gave a long list of cases where the Supreme Court has overruled previous precedent and said, you know, to the opposing counsel there that was in favor of the abortion clinic, would you agree with those cases? And they would say, yeah, we would agree with all those cases. Those were cases that were overruling previous precedent. And Alito then also brought up the Plessy versus Ferguson. Plessy versus Ferguson was a case that was eventually overruled by Brown versus Board of Education. And Plessy said, it's okay to have separate and equal facilities. So you can be equal, you can treat people equal, but have them separate. In other words, you can put a person at the back of the bus because of their skin color. You can put them in some, luggage rack, so to speak, on a train, a separate compartment for them because of their skin color, but they can be treated equal. So you can have separate but equal. That was rejected and overturned, rightly so, by a subsequent case. And so in this case, Alito asked the solicitor and the others, asked the other people on the other side, would you agree with overturning Plessy versus Ferguson? And in fact, once Plessy was decided, 1 year later, would you agree that you could overturn it because it was so wrong and you didn't have to wait for circumstances on the ground and the developments of the society and the law to change, that it was wrong when it was decided and you could immediately overrule it? And they agreed, yes, you can. So then if that's the case, why can't you not overrule Roe and Casey that have been unworkable and they're not grounded in the Constitution or the text or the history at all?
Right. Matt, Justice Sotomayor even seemed to indicate, and this was something that puzzled me when I was hearing her trying to pin them down as to when life begins, as if science doesn't address this at all. But she seemed to boil it down to it's more a matter of religion or belief as to when life begins.
Yeah, she had this bizarre argument that you really don't know scientifically when life begins, and that it's just a religious viewpoint, and therefore to strike down Roe versus Wade, it's just a religious issue and you're imposing your religion. And she uses this analogy, which is pretty bizarre. She talks about, the fetal pain. Mm-hmm. She kept saying, well, the vast, vast minority of doctors and scientists believe in fetal pain, but she ridiculed them that it really can't exist because you really don't know, she said, if the baby feels pain. And she gave this analogy that if you have a dead body and you shock it, it might move. That doesn't mean that it's alive. So consequently, you can't really tell whether the baby's actually feeling pain.
Right.
But you don't just, determine whether the baby feels pain by having a stimuli and you see whether it reacts to it. You know that the baby has pain receptacles because of the science that shows the development of the neural system. But she was really stretching things, and it was really revealing. I would encourage people to listen to some of her arguments about how if the court did not uphold Roe, the court loses its legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's completely the opposite. The court's only going to be legitimate when it adheres to the history, the text, and the meaning of the Constitution.
Right. And this is a point Justice Thomas was getting to. In essence, he asked, where is the right to abortion in the Constitution? Here's a quote. If we're talking about the Second Amendment, I know exactly what we're talking about. If we're talking about the Fourth Amendment, I know what we're talking about because it is written. It's there. What specifically is a right here that we're talking about?
Yeah. And he wanted to know, is it privacy? Is it something else?
Mm-hmm.
So they came back with a third item, and of course they would never indicate where it was rooted.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go back to the original Roe versus Wade, and in fact, this was the first case I ever read. I was a pastor and had no training in law, but it didn't make sense because when you look at it, they would say, we don't know where the right to abortion is, but it's somehow emanating out of the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and it's kind of a penumbra, which means we don't know where it is in the Constitution, but when we look at the Constitution, it's kind of like the edges are glowing, and the penumbra comes from an eclipse where you ultimately have the sun blocked by the moon, and when it actually is a full eclipse, you have a little bit of aura around the edge, so you have this little glow around the edge. So we don't know where it is in the Constitution. It could be in the 4th, 1st, 6th, 5th Amendment, 14th Amendment. We don't know. But somehow it's glowing outside of the edges. Now, that is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. And that's what Thomas was getting to. I know exactly what to look at for the 2nd Amendment, for search and seizure. I know to go to 4th Amendment and so forth. But where do I go for the so-called right to an abortion? and they never were able to answer that.
Yeah.
And in fact, they never pointed them to any constitutional text or provision.
Yeah, because they can't. And
no.
And when we look at, I mean, you mentioned the 14th man, and the 14th has also, you know, often been used for justification for abortion, but it was Justice Alito yesterday that pointed out that many states prohibited abortion at the time the 14th Amendment was adopted. So how could it be considered a fundamental right?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, that was another thing when I first read Roe, is when you read it, you know, they go through all the history. They go through the common law, and that abortion was banned at the point of quickening when the baby, when they saw the baby in your womb and it moved. And then you'll go into where they turned them into statutes, and they actually drafted statutes to make the common law into a piece of legislation. And they all banned abortion. There was never abortion through all 9 months. And then the American Medical Association also was opposed to abortion. And then you had some little committee of an American Medical Association that was suggesting you might want to liberalize it a little bit. But nobody was doing what Roe versus Wade actually did. So when you read all that history, and they go all the way back to the Greek philosophy and the Greek history and the Hippocratic Oath and so forth, and it's this overwhelming evidence, abortion should not be legal. And consequently, then they come to the end and they say, we don't need to determine when life begins. Well, that's the essential question, right? But they said, we're not going to have to determine that question. And if we did, it might ultimately change the outcome of the case, but we're not going to even address that question. And then they issued this decision. They didn't know where to ground it, and so they just came out with it. And that's the Roe versus Wade of January 22, 1973.
Well, folks, we're talking with Matt Staver today about the Dobbs case and analyzing the oral arguments yesterday. And Matt, Justice Thomas doesn't do a whole lot of speaking during oral argument time, but he did ask about that right to abortion, the Constitution. And he also raised an interesting matter about a mother who ingests controlled substances and thus harms her child. The pro-abortion attorney did not grasp at first what he was getting at. Help us understand his point.
Yeah, you know, if say, for example, you can, there are laws right now that say, for example, if a mother does ingest drugs and harms the child in utero, the mother could ultimately be held responsible for that. But abortion is an aberration, and a mother can harm the child at any time through all 9 months by killing it, not just harming it, but taking its life, and it's okay. In fact, what you have is an aberration of abortion on all the areas of law. Because if you look at any area of law, property rights, for example, if you will property to a person and those people who are born afterwards, if you are a baby in the womb at the time of the will being active, somebody passes, then oftentimes you would have inheritable rights to that particular property. And you might have a guardian ad litem appointed for you. So in the area of estates and wills, the unborn child has legal rights. In the area of civil, say, or criminal, there are many states that have the right of the child. So like if you punch somebody in the stomach while they're pregnant, you could be charged and you kill somebody, for example, in doing so. You could be charged with a double homicide, a homicide for the mother, and a homicide for the child.
Mm-hmm. Matt Staver with us here from Liberty Counsel. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to give a little bit more analysis here to some of the arguments presented yesterday. And also, we're going to probe Matt, where does he think this is coming down at this point? And certainly how you can be engaged in prayer as well during this time. But we encourage you to stay with us. Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel, their website is lc.org, the letter L, the letter C, dot O-R-G. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
In our culture, marriage is thought to be optional, and live-in arrangements have become part of the new norm. The DVD Princess Cut tells the story of a Carolina farm girl who has dreamed all of her life of the day when Mr. Wright slips a princess-cut diamond on her finger and affirms to love her forever. Her heart is broken multiple times, though, until she learns a new focus in her life, that true love is worth the wait. In its sequel, Princess Cut 2, underscored is the truth that love bears all things. You'll see what happens when heartache, grief, fears, and trials strike a family and is conquered by hope, courage, enduring love, and the hand of God at work. Princess Cut and its sequel, Princess Cut 2, Love Bears All Things, are now available as a two-DVD set for a donation of $25 to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Constitutional attorney Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel with analysis here for the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization oral arguments that were heard yesterday by the U.S. Supreme Court. As we mentioned previous, Matt will be before the court this coming January 18th on another case. We'll be having him back at another time to talk solely about that particular case. So be praying for him, even in the preparation for that case coming up in January. Matt, just a few more things that we want to point out, and I think they were close to, was it 2 hours for oral arguments yesterday?
Yeah, about 2 hours is what they had set aside.
Justice Kavanaugh, he talked about considering the life of the unborn baby. He said you really have to pick one interest has to prevail over the other at a point in time. Is this what it really boils down to here and kind of pushing toward the court being neutral regarding this matter?
Yeah, his point in that was that the court should be neutral and just have a middle of the road. In other words, it's not in the Constitution. Why should the court take a position on it? Of course, there was no discussion about the 14th Amendment in terms of whether, you know, preservation of your life under the 14th Amendment would include an unborn child. That wasn't the issue before the court. So he says this issue of abortion in Roe and Casey is not grounded in the Constitution, so why should the Supreme Court take a side on it? It really ought to remain neutral and therefore just get out of the, quote, abortion business. He didn't use that particular term, but that's essentially what he's talking about. Get out of the middle of this abortion issue and return it back to the states. And, they then, of course, would say, oh, well, you're going to be taking away the rights of women, and women have grown up and they've depended upon this and they've ordered their lives about this, and it would be a catastrophe if the court didn't adhere, going back again, the stare decisis, the precedent, no matter how it was decided, you just need to adhere to it.
Justice Roberts, kind of surprising, he brought up this issue of allowing abortion up to birth is as bad as China and North Korea.
He did, yeah. He said essentially that, you know, the two nations that have that are China and North Korea.
Yeah, yeah.
That was pretty an interesting comment by the Chief Justice. And the Chief Justice said, you know, and I think where he clearly was is voting to uphold the Mississippi law that bans abortion at 15 weeks. I think that's where he clearly came down. And he asked them, well, you know, you say it's viability under Casey, and that's going to be at, you know, later time, 22, 23 weeks or so. But what's the difference with 15 weeks?
Right.
And they didn't have much of an argument to come back against that.
And one final point here, and this is Justice Barrett, who brought up adoption and safe haven laws. What point was she making with this?
Well, she was saying that all 50 states and the District of Columbia have enacted safe haven laws, which allow a woman who does not want to keep the child the option of leaving the newborn directly in the care of a state facility or someplace where it can be adopted. So if parenting is such a burden, that, quote, burden can be removed through these safe haven laws. So, you know, they're saying, the other side is saying, well, having someone become a parent can be such a burden, and they've decided not to become a parent, so you need to have abortion. And her point coming back was, well, but you already have the option. If you don't want to be a parent, you don't have to be a parent. And, in fact, there's no consequences to it. The safe haven laws were, you know, in place everywhere you go. And you can give birth to the child, and you can then give it to one of these safe haven places, and it can be put up for adoption, and there's no questions asked of you. So if that's your point, that parenting can be too much of a burden, you need abortion, we already have options for parents that don't, for people who give birth that don't want to become, you know, lifelong parents.
In all that you heard yesterday, Matt, was there anything that surprised you, either from a justice or from those that were doing the arguments?
No, not really. The only thing that really surprised me is the lack of defense for Roe, which is not surprising in the sense that there's no defense for it. But I would have thought they would have put up a little bit more of a defense of it, and they never did.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that was a little surprising is the candidness, if you will, and I say candidness because instead of trying to mask it, Sotomayor just put it out front, and that's Breyer as well. And that is, you've got to uphold Roe for selfish reasons, essentially.
Right.
She didn't say selfish reasons, but that's what it is. You got to uphold Roe in order to preserve our court. And if you don't uphold Roe, then we're doomed as a court because people will lose confidence in us.
Right. So what happens? They heard the oral arguments yesterday. What happens now?
Well, now either today or tomorrow, depending upon when they get together, but certainly if not today, they will get together by 10 a.m. tomorrow. And the justices will be in a particular conference room, and they will cast their votes. And it will begin with the Chief Justice and then move all the way down from the Chief Justice to the next in most seniority, which is Thomas, and end up with Barrett, who's the most junior justice. Each justice will have an opportunity to say what their vote is and explain a little reason why they are going to vote in that particular way. Afterward, then, once that vote is done openly, it's confidential, only they know it, then one of them will be assigned to write the majority opinion. And that majority opinion will be initiated. And then those that are in the dissent, they will begin writing their dissents to this decision. And they'll circulate them back and forth. And this is where you have a very critical moment, because this is where Obamacare, which was originally going to be a 5-4 to vote to strike down Obamacare, became a 5-4 vote to uphold but modify Obamacare. And that was done in the last month, because in May it was 5-4 to strike it down. And then the first week in June, when the decisions had to be distributed for final review of those cases that had not yet been released, that's when Roberts, we believe, and I think it's very good information, changed his vote, and it became 5-4 to uphold Obamacare. And that's the same thing that happened in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992. It was argued, and the decision was being written, and the dissents were being written in May. And then at the very end of May, a vote switched, and in June, it became 5-4 to uphold the abortion decision. So it's during that dynamic process that these votes can change, and they have historically on two major decisions, Obamacare and abortion. So even though I have an opinion as to how it's, you know, after looking at the argument, where the justices stand, that doesn't mean that that's going to be exactly what happens when we see the written opinion. So we have to continue to pray, because I can tell you what, there is going to be a lot of pressure by the public toward the Supreme Court, by certain members of Congress toward the Supreme Court. There already have been. And even among the justices themselves, as we know, O'Connor and Souter continually tried to convince Kennedy, and eventually did, to switch his vote.
Yeah, back in Casey. And Matt, those threats have already happened. I mean, Senator Shaheen of New Hampshire, for instance, warned if Roe v. Wade is overturned, a revolution could follow. And I mean, they're trying to build, and young people are not going to tolerate this. And
right. And
it's like they're trying to stir the country up in order to have this revolution that they're talking about.
And don't be surprised if you see a bunch of really protests, maybe even violent protests, between now and the time the opinion comes down. Because as we could see from yesterday's argument, and we've seen this before, you want to believe that the court is immune from the public sentiment. And that's what the courts are supposed to be. They're supposed to be neutral. And they're supposed to be above the political fray and above the public sentiment. They're not taking polls, and they're not making their decisions based upon political opinion. But we obviously see that they are affected by what the public says. We see that in Casey. The reason why Casey was upheld is because the public's going to lose confidence in us if we don't. Yesterday, we ought to uphold abortion in Roe and Casey because Sotomayor and Breyer and Kagan say the public will lose confidence in us if we don't. So they're obviously looking at the public sentiment. But it doesn't just mean that those three are looking at public sentiment. We could see other people looking at the public sentiment as well. And so consequently, we need to pray that they reach the right decision. I think I know where they're going based upon arguments yesterday, but we need to pray that they continue to go down that path as they write this opinion and as the pressure increases until that very moment when the written opinion is released to the public.
Our telephone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. So, Matt, after you heard the oral arguments, if that vote were being cast today and made public today, your gut tells you what?
My gut tells me that there is a 6-3 decision to uphold the Mississippi law, which bans abortion after 15 weeks. And that there would be a 5-4 decision, at least a 5-4 decision, to overrule Roe and Casey. So that would be a huge decision. But I see that, you know, Roberts is the one who I think at this point in time will uphold the Mississippi law. So he's going to be the 6th vote. But once you decide to uphold the Mississippi law that bans abortion at 15 weeks, then you've already gutted Casey because Casey relies upon its own idea of viability. And Casey essentially says the 3-trimester system of Roe was based on viability, although it didn't really use that term necessarily or wasn't really based on that in the original case. But so both of them have this idea of viability, the ability of the baby to live outside the womb as a critical moment.
Mm-hmm.
This case, upholding the Mississippi law, would abandon both of those. And once you gut both of those, with regards to the core issue of viability in both those cases, then how do you uphold those decisions? You really have to rewrite them, and you would be rewriting the template as much as Roe wrote the template in the first place. And it would be just as legitimate now as Roe was then and continues to be. So once you cross that line, and I think that a couple of the justices, at least one of the justices, essentially said that it was, you know, once you cross that line and you said we're going to uphold the 15-week ban, it's all or nothing. You can't uphold the 15-week ban and uphold any aspect of Roe or Casey.
Matt,
it's all or nothing.
Matt with us here today in Crosstalk. Fred is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to ask, if Roe is overturned, do we now have 50 states? Cases of against abortion, and then will Planned Parenthood lose federal money, and will abortion continue over these 50 different battles in the state?
Okay, thank you, Fred.
Good question. To the first one, if Roe is overturned, Roe and Casey, the abortion decision is overturned, it returns back to the states. And what you're going to find is the majority of states, vast majority, will ban abortion across the board. There may be certain exceptions, but the vast majority will ban them. You'll have a very small number of states that allow abortion at some level. And as it relates to federal funding, that would be a completely separate question,
mm-hmm.
because things can be federally funded even if they're a state issue. So that's not going to have anything to do with federal funding. However, if we get different people in Congress, it will have a big thing to do with federal funding because they will end up, you know, stopping. Right now, the current Congress is pushing federal funding, at least the House.
Pushing
but
the funding.
But if you change composition, that will stop.
Friends, we'll be back in 1 minute. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council and taking your calls at 800-733-9829. Back in a minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. I've just spent 3 days and hours on television going through the U.S. Supreme Court complaint written by lead attorney Kurt Olson, also a former U.S. Navy SEAL. This is a complaint that is to be filed eventually with the U.S. Supreme Court related to election fraud, particularly in the states of Wisconsin, Arizona, Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. For those who say there was no voter fraud, this 75-page complaint, not to mention the many pages that are the exhibits, Well, it's filled with information that even I didn't know about, and I've been studying this for over a year. My friends, we have a serious problem with the issue of elections being free and fair in America. The full complaint can be read as a public service at frankspeech.com, and then just look for the banner, Supreme Court Complaint. Click there and read it. 75 pages every American should read if we want to remain a free nation with free elections. Thank you.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America with analysis of the Dobbs case yesterday. Our oral arguments were heard. The justices to be gathering together likely before the end of this week to cast their vote, to determine who is going to write the majority opinion and then the dissenting opinions. And the public, us, will likely then learn at the very end of the term next June what the decision was. Taking your phone calls today with Matt Staver, we have Greg calling next from Tucson, Arizona. Greg, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I would describe myself as I'm a volunteer with American Right to Life. I'm an abortion abolitionist. I'm a personhood abolitionist.
Mm-hmm.
And the law in Mississippi, just as the fetal heartbeat law in Texas, are not pro-life laws. They are counterfeit. And, you know, Mark Crutcher at Life Dynamics in Texas, he calls the Christian so-called pro-life voter the cheapest date in town. You know, you're just regulating child murder. You say, okay, go ahead and kill him, you know, up to 15 weeks. And that's wrong. It's as wrong as, you know, Dred Scott was wrong.
Okay.
You know,
well, Greg, thank you.
Turn it to the state.
Great, thank you.
So I have a question, please.
Go ahead.
Would you please have my friend Dr. Alan Keyes on as your guest to talk about this in more depth?
Great. Thank you, Greg. I got your question here. Where I want Matt to deal with this issue because, Matt, there are two issues. One is Mississippi, and you know, Greg has a point. I mean, killing a baby at any point of development after conception, you know, that is murder. I mean, that is taking place there.
It clearly is murder. And, Greg, I don't want you to get the opinion that I agree. I'm just describing what the case is. I agree that life begins at fertilization. I believe all abortion is wrong. I believe it's also wrong in the cases of rape and incest. The only time that I think you would have it is if you have the life for a life, and that might be a fallopian tube or one of those kinds of very, 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 very rare situations. One of my family members is a product of rape and incest, and there's two generations that have been part of my father's sin against my sister. So I have personal experience with someone who's been a victim of both rape and incest, horrible situations.
Mm-hmm.
But life always overcomes tragedy, mm-hmm. and death is never the answer. However, in this particular situation, we wouldn't even be talking about overturning Roe versus Wade unless it was for the Mississippi case. Now, I understand that life begins at conception, but I don't think that you ought to down pro-lifers who believe in the sanctity of human life just as strongly as you do, because they're taking a different approach to overturn this decision of Roe versus Wade and to reestablish a sanctity of human life ethic.
And so there are two issues, Matt. One is this at 15 weeks. The second is, though, an overturn of Roe v. Wade, which totally puts it back to each individual state, of which many are saying no abortion for any reason whatsoever.
That's right. And many states will say no abortion for any reason. That'll just ban it across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, life transcends boundaries and geographies and state borders. So we ought to have it nationally in all of our territories that life is protected from the moment of fertilization.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. But at this point in time, you know, you've got 62 million babies that have been slaughtered, and that number keeps growing. And we have to overturn Roe versus Wade. We have to at least begin with that, but that doesn't mean that we end with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's called incrementalism, and it won't work.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, the problem is having such a myopic view that you shoot at your colleagues who are very strongly pro-life, just like you. And that's a real problem to do that. And I just really think you ought to continue the position that you have, but don't down your colleagues who are working in the same path that you are.
Thank you, Greg. Bethany is next in El Dorado Springs, Missouri. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just want to say, wow, what an opportunity our country has at this time. I think a lot of people are in shock under this administration to have this kind of opportunity. And I just want to encourage everyone across the nation to fast for the day. I mean, just extend your soul out to this situation and fast for the day. And that's my comment. God bless you.
Thank you, Bethany. And that continues.
Well, thank you. And I think, you know, your enthusiasm and your voice really, I think, underscores that. And we ought to be fasting and praying, because there is a lot to fast and pray for, because no matter what they vote by the end of this week, it's not over till it's over.
Randy is calling from Oskaloosa, Iowa. You're on the air.
Yeah, Matt. I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of the unborn baby as a pletormittent heir. Have you ever heard of that legal term?
Say it one more time, Randy.
Pletormittent heir. P-R-E. I don't know how to spell it, but have you ever heard of that?
I'm not quite sure exactly what you're saying, but it doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah, and you've got a muffled line there, Randy. Sorry about that. Leroy in Atlanta, Georgia, you're on the air.
Three things really fast. In Portland, Jim mentioned a story in Portland that they were attempting to pass an ordinance that would give people bereavement if they had an abortion.
Yeah.
Matt, you should use that to whip them upside the head when you go to the Supreme Court. next, Sotomayor, a friend of mine explained to me that Sotomayor basically said that fetuses are brain dead. Well, how in the world did she become
essentially, yeah, that's
Supreme
essentially
Court?
What she's suggested.
Yeah. And Leroy, your third point?
And the last point is this, dealing with the racism of abortion, if that is let known to BLM, black people everywhere, that Margaret Sanger is a racist, how can you support both? You can't hold two positions.
Yeah.
Isn't that what the word tells us?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, and we actually have our brief. You would be, I think, encouraged to read it, and surprised at how racist and eugenic abortion has been, and intentionally, how intentional Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger have been to eliminate particularly the black population.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
You mentioned earlier, a caller mentioned Mark Crutcher, and they put together Maafa 21.
Maafa 21.
A full documentary on this issue, and really an eye-opener. We are out of time. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. Matt, thank you for your analysis of this. And as well, we're asking people be praying for you as you prepare for your case in January.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
And folks, we'll be having Matt back on to talk specifically about what he is arguing before the U.S. Supreme Court. So oral arguments took place yesterday. Votes are coming up. Folks, be in prayer. Be in prayer earnestly for these justices. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.